Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
All right, we're back. Microphone problems.
Yeah, you got your cord tangled in your wheel on the chair. I've done that 1,000 times, and you sit down, you like rip your neck off.
I'm like, so why is there no audio? Camera on. Was it really on? Nice. Clip that and put it on Instagram.
Yeah, put that on Instagram for the people to see. Dusty can't figure out his chair. People will like that.
Yeah, well, people like to make fun, and I'm okay with it. Yeah. I got thick skin.
Look at this idiot out here can't figure out his
totally agree.
Chair.
Yeah. Totally agree. Yeah. Not going to lie. Yeah, it's tough. No wonder we go through headphones like it's going out of style. We'll have Dana Hughes here in about 5 minutes here on Fesco and Dusty. You were talking about something at 6 o'clock maybe people missed. Look at you, by the way, going back and watching games.
Yeah, we sat down last night. Uh-huh. There's nothing on yesterday, right? There's no sports at all whatsoever worth my time.
The TGL was on last night, Tiger versus Rory.
Oh, I must have missed that one.
Must have. College basketball was on last night.
Oh, I must have missed that.
The NBA was on last night.
So no sports were on last night. And so I put on NFL Network at like, I don't know, I think it was like 7 o'clock or whatever. And it said NFL football. I'm like, oh, they're going to rerun the Chiefs Bills game. As soon as I turn it on, it's Washington and Philly. And Jen's like, not happening. She goes, I wish they were rerunning our game. I go, well, I recorded it. Let's start it up and watch it again. And so we started watching the game. The kids come out. You were at the game. And Jen goes, it's a completely different perspective, though. You know, watching it on TV versus, you know, being at the game and whatnot. And so we watched it. I think I got through about the first half. We kind of fast forward talk. It was on in the background more than anything. And, you know, the conversation, you know, alluded to yesterday a lot about the referees, right? People were talking about the referees yesterday, and especially that fourth down play, which a lot of people believe that Josh Allen was clearly passed the line and he got the first down and the ref screwed him. Well, that's just not the case. I talked to somebody yesterday who was involved in the TV production side of things with this and was out in the truck, and they had about 40 different angles of cameras to look at this, because these AFC championship games, Super Bowls, more cameras on them than anything else. There's in-house Arrowhead cameras. There's cameras from everybody, right? There's a lot of cameras. And so there's about 40 different viewpoints of this play. And I was told by somebody not one of those viewpoints showed anything that was indisputable visual evidence that would have given Josh Allen the first down. And so after talking to that person who watched, you know, 40 roughly different angles of this play, it's come to the conclusion for me, I'm on board. We do not have any evidence that say Josh Allen got that first down. We have no evidence to say he should have gotten that first down. And just people need to stop the complaining about it, because it's just not true. So after seeing almost 40 different angles of this in the TV truck, the conclusion was, no, there's nothing to overturn here in this situation. So Josh Allen, instead of moving past that, they weren't able to get past that play, I guess, and that screwed up the whole game. I don't know. They still had the lead at the time, and there was still plenty of time left, you know, in that football game. So people can complain all they want and moan and groan about the officials all they want, but after talking to somebody who saw almost 40 different angles of that play, there's no evidence that says Josh Allen got that first down.
No, but there's evidence there were 5 fumbles recovered by the Buffalo Bills, a drop pass at the very end of the game.
A bad play call on 4th and inches and 3rd and inches, bad going for 2. Like, there's plenty of evidence out there of bad things that could have been rectified, but this is what we all just keep coming back to because it's easy. It's a simpleton approach. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of what people just like to react to, because they don't want to admit that the Kansas City Chiefs at every level are just better than every other organization that's out there. And what they do and how they do their thing and the little things that they do all equal these big things. And it's hard work. Mm-hmm. It's difficult. It's a lot of time. People don't want to put in the time. Everybody wants a quick fix. And it's just easy to blame the officials and say it's their fault. And I saw Max tweet last night, now we're going to have microchips in the ball, because every time the Bills lose to the Chiefs, we got to change a rule in the NFL to try to get the Buffalo Bills back on top. How about doing your job? Like Bill Belichick said, do your job. If Sean McDermott did his job, if Josh Allen did his job, if Dalton Kincaid did his job, you know, if Joe Brady did his job, then we're not talking about the referees. But all those people didn't do their job, so it becomes the referee's fault because it's easy to sit there and just blame the officials for this one. And really, it's become a very, very, very stale narrative, in my opinion, in the NFL. Sometimes you just have to sit back and accept that the Kansas City Chiefs just do everything better than everybody else.
And maybe you don't have to be the best team at that time, but maybe the best team situationally, you need to be the best. Because, again, somebody has a great point on the text line. Fast forward and put the Chiefs in the scenario of down three with 3:33 left in the ball in the Super Bowl. I'll take it right now. We can skip everything else. We would win.
We win by four. And that's what I said yesterday. If the shoe was on the other foot and that was Patrick Mahomes taking over, we win that game by four.
Because there's too many times where the evidence is there. Wasp, the 4th and 9 played at Tyreek against Baltimore. Super Bowls in the past where they've came back and been down. I mean, you got to be perfect, or you have to be that much better than your opponent when that much is on the line in that sort of situation. And it's not the ref's fault that Josh Allen was shook on that first drive. It's not the ref's fault they recovered 5 fumbles and did nothing with it. It's not the ref's fault that they couldn't get 1 freaking yard when it mattered most.
It's not the ref's fault that Sean McDermott clams up in these big game situations and doesn't know what to do. Not the ref's fault that he kicked it into the end zone in the 13-second game either.
And it's not our fault that Dane and Hughes loves doing this interview every Tuesday at 7:25.
You hear them on game days in the booth.
Quickly, they get chunky and funky with stretching the field vertically.
And Thursday nights at 6 during Players Only.
Spitfire, hot fire take.
Here's Chiefs Radio Network color analyst, Damon Hughes, on your new home for Chiefs football, 96.5 The Fan.
That's right. Dayton Hughes time is brought to you by Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Kansas City. Discover the benefits of blue. Dayton, is this the greatest 7-year stretch in any sort of sports history?
Absolutely. I don't know how anyone can argue different. I know we got the haters out there that want to give us credit for referees and calls and every other excuse under the sun, but the fact remains, and I think Nate Burleson said it great, just appreciating the greatness should be at the forefront of everybody's mind. And, you know, there's a difference between being a sports fan that just has the allegiance to a team, or being a sports fan that loves the game. And I grew up, obviously you guys know, and Fesco especially knows, I grew up in Jersey, never called myself a Giant fan or a Jets fan. There were times I was a Mets fan in the 80s, a Yankees fan in the 70s, but more so, I just didn't have the allegiance to a specific team. I liked watching the game. I liked watching greatness. And it's unfortunate because of social media mostly, but it's unfortunate that it seems like people have gotten away from just appreciating greatness. Like, you know, being here in the 80s and watching George Brett and Frank White and, you know, all the greatness that was there in the 80s, you can just appreciate greatness there at Kauffman Stadium. You can appreciate the greatness now, and it doesn't have to be any ulterior, motives or ulterior type of mindsets about excuses and favorites and all that stuff. I just appreciate it. I think everybody else should as well. But it's definitely the greatest 7-year run.
No, it's been amazing, obviously. And I wish other people can appreciate it. But we also understand why they can't appreciate it, Danny, because they're jealous of all of this. And that's where the blaming of the referees comes in, instead of just looking at the big picture and realizing that everything that the Chiefs do is just better than what you do.
Yeah. And why can't that just be digestible? Like, why can't that be true? And as much as we may have hated Tom Brady and didn't like the run, I think as a football fan, you appreciated, wow, that's what greatness looks like. Yeah. And it took me a while playing with Joe Montana, where everybody was like, okay, the GOAT. And to be honest, I didn't give him credit until he went to Tampa Bay and won a Super Bowl, because you always had the whole ideal of, well, he only won it with Bill Belichick, and how do you give them greatness individually without them being collectively connected? Then he went to Tampa and won a Super Bowl, and I'm like, well, I guess there goes Joe to number two.
Right.
That's my former teammate, and I love him, but he's number two. And you can appreciate that greatness and looking back on it. Yeah, we were hoping for somebody else to represent the AFC. We were hoping that the Chiefs would jump into that mix at times. But now looking back, you're like, yeah, that was a great, great run for the Patriots. Why can't that be the same right now?
And better for the Chiefs, you know, like I don't want to go 10 years, you know, getting beat by Eli Manning twice in the Super Bowl. Like I want to have I don't want to have a long uninterrupted streak. I've even heard people in the national media, Dan, saying the team's going to win four in a row at this point, you know?
How good would that be? How cool would that be if we are talking about a four-peat? I mean, now I think you, even if Patrick Mahomes doesn't get to seven, you still got to put him as the GOAT at that point. If you're able to go in this day and age with the salary cap and, you know, how players are moving around and guaranteed monies and looking to see what if the grass is greener on the other side. Not that that wasn't done back with Tom Brady, but it doesn't seem like it was done as much. And yet, if we're talking about a four-peat, my goodness.
I think it's interesting, Dana, as we talked to Dana Hughes here on 96.5 The Fan, I think it's interesting, Dana, when you look at where everybody has a conversation of who are the top quarterbacks, right? We know that Mahomes is one, and in the last 3 years, Mahomes has beaten Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, and Joe Burrow. In that order. Like, those are the last three victories that he has beaten. I think if you go over and ask anybody who are the top quarterbacks after Mahomes, they would say Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, Josh Allen. Not in that order, but those would be the three names that come after Patrick Mahomes to describe the next best quarterbacks in the NFL. I think that's another thing that makes these runs so impressive is that in the AFC Championship game, when the game matters most and everybody wants to know who's the next best quarterback, they're still getting beat by the best quarterback.
Yeah, and you just got to tip your cap to it. I mean, it's not like you mentioned, like it's not like it's a situation where there were a bunch of injuries to the great quarterbacks and Patrick Mahomes had an easy road because all the competing quarterbacks or talented quarterbacks were injured or some fluke happened. No, we went against the greats of these times and beat them head to head. Several of them at times have been in our division, but definitely rivals. And then when you look at how the NFL schedules us each and every year, especially this past year, win the Super Bowl, play the most games in the last 5 years, and then open up on Thursday night against the team you beat in the AFC Championship and the MVP of the league in Lamar Jackson. Then come right back and play against Joe Burrow and then go through the list. And then, by the way, and you guys have heard this and probably have mentioned it too, we're going to give you three games in 11 days, two of them on the road in the final part of the season, quarter of the season. Like, and then the quarterbacks that you faced during those times, the playoff teams that you faced during those times. This season, we played eight playoff games. We played eight games against playoff teams from last year. Next year, we'll play 10 games against playoff teams from this year.
Yeah.
Like, it's stacked up that the greatness of Patrick Mahomes has to face greatness just about every week, and we prevail like no other.
But it's the referees.
Yeah.
It's all the referees. It has nothing to do with, like, Andy being a better coach on game day than Sean McDermott or even Greg Rousseau after the game saying they ran stuff we've never, ever seen on tape before, pulling a left tackle around and, you know, that kind of stuff. Being just better than everybody else, that's hard for people to grasp in this world, Dana, of just kind of low-hanging fruit and throwing nonsensical sports takes at the wall like these network TV shows do. That kind of sets the tone and decorum, if you will, for the entire, you know, sports public out there. Instead of just focusing on what really is going on, people want to focus on that ancillary stuff. And to me, that takes away credit from what Andy Reid and Brett Veach and company have accomplished here in Kansas City.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. I would say this. I give a pass to the general fan because they don't know any better. Bless their heart. They don't know any better. But the pundits, the former athletes, the ones that give oxygen to all this nonsense, those are the ones that bother me the most. Like, I understand, I mean, you guys know better than me how tough it is to carry a show for 3 and 4 hours every day. So I understand as I'm sitting here and Get Up is on TV right now. I understand how tough that is every single day. But I also understand that you have control of what you give oxygen to. And to fan the fires of the general fan, assuming games are fixed and there's favorites and referees are doing this and that, just bothers me because I think it takes away, again, takes away from the greatness. I thought it was cool this week seeing Colin Saunders, the former D lineman for the Chiefs, now with the Saints, tweeting on a couple of occasions about appreciating the greatness and wanting, even though when he went elsewhere as a free agent, contrary to what we've heard from Tyreek Hill and what we don't hear from guys like Kadarius Toney and other players that either were jettisoned or left on their own accord, that they can appreciate supporting the team and the organization that won championships for them, and they won championships with them. But the last tweet from Colin Saunders was the coolest one. It kind of feeds right into your point about what Greg Russo said. He said, "I practiced against this offense year after year, week after week, off season, in season, and I never saw a quarterback sweep." I never saw it in practice for years. So imagine the surprise of the Buffalo Bills when Patrick Mahomes spins around, tucks it, and runs it in to the end zone on a couple of occasions. So that just tells you about what the epitome of being outcoached is in the NFL. So let's put aside all the craziness about referees and give credit where it's due when you're talking about Andy Reid, Matt Nagy, Steve Spagnuolo, and the rest of this crew.
I don't know the name, and I'm sure you could help me out with this, of who the receivers coach is for the Kansas City Chiefs, Danan, but
Connor Embry.
What a guy, right? I mean, I know there's veteran players on this team that have helped out with Rashee Rice and Xavier Worthy, but this is back-to-back years, massive hits for Brett Veach, and they've been well-prepared because the narrative for these receivers in an Andy Reid offense is it's a slow burn, and then it's the next year, it's like, okay, now it's your turn. Xavier Worthy is doing almost the exact same thing that Rashee Rice did last year in his rookie season as a former receiver in the league. How impressive is it that these young kids are showing veteran leadership this early in a team's franchise that's been so dominant over these last 7 years?
It's amazing because it's, you know, we talk about the NFL, you say next man up because of the injuries, because of free agency, because of the dynamic of the game. And yet, based on your point that you just made, one of the key components of that is how often have we not talked about Rashee Rice? Mm-hmm. He's the leading receiver last year outside of Travis Kelce, but as a wide receiver coming into this season, how he performed up until his injury, and we haven't even spoken about him. Mm-hmm. That tells you about depth. It tells you about coaching. So when you mention Connor Embry and you talk about what these receivers have done, and Sky Moore being on injured reserve, Mecole Hardman on injured reserve, go and get Juju Smith-Schuster back, go and get DeAndre Hopkins, get them reacclimated back to this offense and in a championship fashion, not just a fill-the-gap fashion. Who would have thought Juju Smith-Schuster would have the game he would have in the AFC Championship?
Right.
Like, I don't think that was on anybody's bingo board about Juju Smith-Schuster having that type of game. But yet, he was coached up and put in a position to be successful. It's not necessarily about having the flash and dash of Tyreek Hill or the big play ability of some of the great wide receivers in this game. It's about each individual guy being put in a position to make a play and be successful. Justin Watson, prime example of that. Nico Remigio, putting in a position. We wondered ever since training camp, we keep hearing about this Remigio guy, and you know he might make the team, and he might be counted on as a wide receiver. And then when the wide receivers went down, he wasn't elevated from practice squad. And you wondered, okay, well, what's the deal with that? Like, he's supposed to be the guy. And had it not been for a key drop in the preseason, I think people would have been clamoring for him to be one of the top four receivers. But yet they knew better than us. as a fan base. They threw him in there as a return guy once Mecole Hardman went down, and now the rest is history. Everybody's been put in a position for success, and that's why we are where we are.
Yeah, it's been, you know, just awesome to watch this entire thing, Dana, and as we get set to start packing for New Orleans and whatnot, I mean, the quick, you know, look at this game, stop Saquon Barkley and we win pretty much?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a little bit more complex than that, but that's definitely a start. I mean, I think if you are Steve Spagnuolo and you're looking at this offense for the Eagles, you'd like to say the way to get them out of their comfort zone, the way to get them out of their winning ways or the winning confidence that they would have and that they've had in every game is to stop the run and force them outside themselves. And that's one of the key things that I think that our organization has done better than other organizations. Like, we go back to last year's AFC Championship. Yeah, I don't think John Harbaugh went into the week of practice saying, you know what, we're going to run the ball a handful of times. No, but we got them outside of their game plan. We got them outside of their identity. Sean McDermott, just last weekend, like every other game this season or the close games, did they go for it on fourth down as many times? I don't think so. I'm not saying that they didn't go for it at times, but even going back to the regular season game, most of the teams that they play during the season, when it's fourth and two, they probably kick the field goal. But we got them outside of themselves, and in that circumstance, it worked for them. But in this circumstance, during the AFC Championship, there were decisions that were made from a coaching standpoint that was definitely a picture of them being outside themselves, recognizing the greatness that they were playing against. And anytime we can get a team outside themselves, I'd bet on the Chiefs, because we don't get outside of ourselves. We have a championship caliber organization. We have a championship caliber preparation, and hopefully that'll get us a third straight Super Bowl.
No doubt. Stay inside yourself with Mitch Holtis. You guys go for a three-peat call yourselves on Sunday, February 9th. Dana, and hopefully we'll run into each other in New Orleans and continue to stay safe and continue to do good work on the Chiefs Radio Network.
Appreciate that. And February 9th, that's my father's birthday as well. So
nice.
It could definitely be a double celebration. So I'm looking forward to it, guys.
No doubt. The hell with Saquon's birthday. It's Mr. Hughes' birthday.
There you go.
Dana, take care, buddy.
Love it.